Okay, I'll just do my little spiel for 1 minute while the girls are getting settled, the teacher and the assistant. So, welcome. This is the which class in the DB module? What number?
11.
Oh, you're getting down. 11 out of, well, 13, 14, yeah. 14 is a little tricky though, right? Yeah, we'll talk about that later. You have to be at a graduate level to understand that one. So my name is Jill Marie, and I'm the center manager here. And many of you have heard this little talk a lot of times. Is anybody actually new for tonight? Oh, yeah. I know John's new. You are not. Anybody else new? So John's brave. He's going to just jump right into emptiness. There's always somebody who does it. Tonight it's you. You picked the lottery number. So Joanna's going to go over all the details of the building. I'm just here to welcome you and say thank you for coming. And you're at the home stretch, and this is an amazing class, and you have an amazing teacher, all decked out in Medicine Buddha blue. And it's the Day of Miracles. So it's good. It's just like good, good, good all the way around. So have good thoughts because they're multiplied times, is it 100 million or 100,000 or million? 100 million?
Exponentially.
So don't think anything negative tonight. So the other thing we just always mention is that this our classes are always offered on a donation basis. Sometimes that sounds like free. You can determine how whatever that sounds like to you. But it is it takes a lot of money. I think, what did we come down to? Was it $681 a day? Do you remember at the annual appeal to operate the building? Yeah, so it takes a lot of money to operate this, but it's not a guilt trip. We just want to let you know. And there's many ways you can offer by donating service or in-kind donations or helping out, volunteering, or monetary gifts. If you would like to do anything monetary-wise, there's a couple boxes right outside the door. Well, one right outside the door and one on the front desk. Or you can go online and donate that way.
But make sure you say that it was from DB.
Yeah, that's true. She gets points. And I was proud to bring it to the board members to say, you know, these little talks have helped bring in, you know, and then she's going to continue it on after my plug. But it's an amazing class, and I'm very glad you're here, and welcome again. Now it's Joanna's turn.
Thank you. Okay, I'll talk slowly. Again, a lot of you have heard what I'm going to run through tonight for just as an introduction for people who haven't heard it before, and to remind those of you who weren't listening the last time. All of these teachings are streamed and recorded, which is why we use microphones. And when we do group discussion, we'll be passing microphones to whoever is speaking. So please use them. It's not because you can't be heard in this room, but because it's being recorded. And when you do use them, hold them up close to your mouth like a ice cream cone, because they don't pick up from a distance. So there are six classes in this module, which is Wisdom of Emptiness, and the final class will be combined with our prayer, our practice day, and so that is going to run an hour extra, so it'll go from 6:30 to 9:30, and I'll remind you again before we meet then. And if you do want to hear the streaming or the audio, the way to access it is through the members only page on our website. And to become a member is a pretty straightforward thing. And we have a new members orientation on the third Sunday of each month. And Kim Lillig, our membership chair, can help you get oriented and answer questions about membership or whatever. However, if there is any, Kim's not here right now, but if there's anyone who knows they want to become a member tonight, if you will raise your hand, I'll text Kim and she'll come over and meet with you right after class. So is there anyone who is not a member who is interested in becoming a member tonight? No pressure. Okay, well, I'll let Kim know. But if you are interested, the third Sunday of each month at noon. The videos also appear on YouTube. They're a little hard to find, but there's some instructions here on how to find them. Okay, the text for this class, there were four required texts. Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, which we use for all the modules. virtue and reality, which is part of the Lama Wisdom, Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive. So it's available on a dana basis, that is, on a donation basis. There's not a set price for that. But any donation you can make for it would be appreciated. The other text, Virtue and Reality, or the Heart Sutra, an oral teaching, and How to See Yourself as You Really Are. The second one is by His Holiness. We have limited number of copies of those in the bookstore, and I don't know if we're going to be able to get any more. So I think Steve is just going to encourage you to read whatever you can. We'll talk about it. But Virtue and Reality is available, and so you can pick up one of those, and as well as Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand. All of the rest of the required readings are on the FPMT Online Learning Center site, and the second page are the instructions on how to access that if you haven't been there. Did you raise your hand? Okay. You have to set up a username and password, which is very easy to do before you access these. But that is how to get to the other required reading. And let's see. Lastly, we really encourage you to follow these completion cards, which includes doing the required readings as well as meditations and practices, because it will really help you get what Steep is presenting here. It's where the real work's done. So, and if you do want to get a certificate of completion for the whole Discovering Buddhism course, series of modules, you fill out, complete one of these for each module and have the teacher sign it on the last day. But, okay. Jack.
CD. How to See Yourself as You Really Are is in the public library in hardback, but it's also on CD form, which I read as I was driving, so it was good.
Is that Waite County?
Yeah.
Okay. Waite County Library. Any other comments or questions? I haven't checked the Durham Library. I have to. I don't know. I'll let you announce that. What? I do too. No, 13th, March 13th.
Okay. I don't know.
Venerable Robina is going to be coming in March. I think it's March 13th. And it's a Monday, and she's going to be teaching this class the day she arrives. So be here. It'll be worth it. It'll be great.
All of your questions you have for me, she'll answer.
Yeah, just wait till she gets
all
there.
All those questions for the 13th.
I think that's all I have.
Okay. Let's get going. All right. So we're going to start by just doing a short meditation, just trying to let Monday roll off our backs and bring ourselves here. And we start, if this is new for you, then check your posture, and then we'll check our minds. So first check your posture. If you're sitting in a chair, make sure your feet are flat on the ground. The main point of the posture is that your back is straight, like stacked coins, that your muscles aren't working too hard, you're more balanced and aligned. Then if you'd like, you can have the formal meditative hand posture, which is your left hand right below your navel, your right hand palm gently resting in it, with your thumbs just touching. So you make like a little egg-shaped circle right below your navel. Your arms are out away from your sides, whether you're sitting in a chair or on the floor, so that your breathing is unrestricted and not collapsed. And then lift your head, you know, from the back of your neck. It should go straight up. So you tuck your chin just a little bit so that the neck isn't breaking off that nice line from your spine. Put your tongue at the back of your teeth. This unclenches your jaw a little bit. You can keep your eyes either lightly open or closed completely, whatever's your preference, but a little light to come in and keep you alert. And then you set your intention. And since we're going to be studying about wisdom, I would highly suggest that we all set our intention that the time that we have dedicated to coming here today and thinking about this topic, that our intention is to get as far as we can with understanding emptiness so that our wisdom will grow and grow and benefit ourselves and everyone else around us. So let me really realize and understand this topic. So with that in mind, then, we're just going to take a few minutes to count our breaths and kind of let our mind, that muscle of our mind, just relax a little bit. So on the inhale, one exhale is one. You can count up to 10, or if it's easier to keep track of something shorter, 3 or 5, whatever works best for you. And especially in the beginning, after a long day, it's particularly helpful to use something visual, like imagine this pure energy in front of you, Buddha's wisdom. You're inhaling it. It's like clear, crystal white light. It's filling every cell in your body. And then you're exhaling anything you don't need, whether it's some illness, fatigue, thoughts, worry, whatever it is, you exhale that in the form of thick smoke that just disappears beyond the reaches of the universe. And then again, you inhale what you need and exhale what you're getting rid of. So I'll give you a few minutes to just do that kind of cleansing meditation. So studying emptiness, it said that you need two things, collecting more merit and purifying. I'm not sure if that makes a whole lot of sense to you all, but for me, the way I always have to have things very concrete to really get them and follow them, and I just always think of the purification is really like you have a window in front of you and you're not going to be able to really see through it unless you really clean it up. And then merit, it's something that's hard to explain. You have to just kind of feel it. And there's so many ways that you're creating merit all day long. And if we kind of dedicate them towards understanding emptiness, that's part of the purpose of what we're going to do tonight. I want to start us off by saying the refuge prayer and the four immeasurables, because of this whole idea of collecting merit and purifying. Emptiness is a really central topic and also really challenging. So that's why we're going to start this way, because a lot of times, you know, I have you do something a little different in the beginning. So it's on page 34, and we'll say refuge three times. And here's one of the reasons why you say things three times, or why you might prostrate three times. I remember always wondering, like, why three? So I heard His Holiness say, you know, when you're doing something three times like this, think then the first time it's for all of the lifetimes that you're going to have in samsara, all of the times that you are hopefully evolving and moving through samsara, all of those lifetimes. The second time you say it, it's for your liberation from that cycle of endless suffering, right? It's dedicated towards that. And the third time you say it or you prostrate, it's for the complete enlightenment, where you're completely free of all those tendencies and you have the supreme enlightenment. So that helped me a lot. Otherwise, sometimes I get lost in the middle of by the second or third one. I was just planning what I was doing anymore. So, okay, so let's do these three. The first time, again, thinking of all of our lifetimes and say refuge. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now this time, thinking again of liberating yourself from that cycle. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And now this third time, to be completely free and have supreme enlightenment. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And you see in here, even this simple prayer is by my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha, because there has to be a cause, right? Something has to create the next thing that happens. And so that's the same thing what I was talking about with merit. The reason we collect merit is so that then it can produce something. And what we're hoping by studying emptiness is that it produces that wisdom to understand what is this we're spending all this time talking about. Okay. So, yeah, I'm going to beg your forgiveness right off the bat because I'm just getting over something, so I'm a little spacey. And I didn't want to cancel because we canceled last week, and we have to somehow make up last week. We're not making it up today. Somehow we'll, like, add 15 minutes on to certain classes, and then when Rabina's here, that'll probably be a little bit of a longer class right there. So, yeah, if I'm spacey, that's why. So here are the questions I'm thinking that this class is going to answer. And you may have more questions that we'll add to it. But what is emptiness? What is dependent arising? How are these two related to each other? And how is emptiness related to liberation and enlightenment? So first of all, some of these terms are really kind of strange because we're using them sometimes in the Tibetan Dharma language. They have a term that's only used in that dharmic way. It's not used like, can you please empty this cup out? It's not used that way as well. So we have this kind of extra trick. When we think of empty, I mean, what do you think of when you hear just the word empty in your life? What does it mean? Somebody uses the word empty.
Nothingness.
Something has nothing. That's okay. I'll just, if it's just a short word, I'll repeat it.
Avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Often a lack.
A lack, yeah. Right. There's nothing in my cup. That's not what this means. Except you have to be sure what it's empty of. So in this case, if I said the cup is empty of tea, you know, that's what it's empty of. In our daily language, I feel empty. You know, empty of what? Empty, usually somebody is empty of happiness or joy. They're usually saying they're empty of something that's positive and they're feeling empty. So in this way, though, what we have to figure out is what are we saying things are empty of? Because a lot of times we can trip over into a way of thinking about emptiness. We usually are right. There's usually two ways that we're thinking. Either things are not empty and they exist in a way that we're challenging when we use the word empty. Or people think in a more nihilistic way. Oh, things don't exist. Oh, there's just nothing. It's either full of something or it's completely nothing. And emptiness is trying to cut right down that middle and say, no, it's a really hard line to walk. We think we get it intellectually, but there's so many nuances to this. So that's why it's a little tricky. But in the very beginning, I'm going to give you a definition. It'll probably be on the test. I make the test very passable, don't worry. But it's a good definition just to have so you can play with it in your head. Emptiness is the absence of true or inherent existence. So it tells you what it's empty of. It's the lack of, it's the voidness of, it's the missingness of true or inherent existence. All right, now what in the world is true or inherent existence, right? That's next week. It is a characteristic, it's the ultimate truth, because we're going to be talking about the two truths eventually. It's the ultimate truth, not the conventional truth. It is a characteristic of everything that exists. Emptiness is a characteristic of everything that exists. I know that's a lot. Ignorance is then the active misknowledge of reality. And ignorance, because we're not seeing things as empty, creates this whole problem called cyclic existence. All right. So let's just talk a little bit about emptiness being the absence of true or inherent existence. Really studying emptiness is studying how things exist. And there's I feel like there's two doorways into understanding the topic of emptiness. So you have to find an entry point to anything that's complicated. I love to read poetry and play around with poetry. And a lot of times when we're reading a difficult poem, someone will ask, what's the doorway into this poem? It's just like you find that little doorway and now I think I understand the poem. Same thing with emptiness. And it's really important to remember that the doorway into understanding emptiness is impermanence. That's one doorway in, and dependent arising. And for those of you who have been studying anything about the other schools of Buddhism, the early schools, that's what they were studying really, is impermanence and dependent arising. Everybody could agree on that. Then the more advanced schools take it to other levels. But they all understand that things are impermanent, and they all understand that things come together based on causes and conditions. So it's still not all of emptiness, but it's a very good place to start. Because we can understand physical things, you know, these things in this room that we look at are made up of things. They didn't just always exist in this room. They are put together by they have parts, right? We all can get that. We all get that they arose out of certain causes and conditions. And the same thing then applies not just to physical, but also to thoughts and ideas. Anything that has come together also will go apart. That's kind of the good news and the bad news. Good news, bad news. Things that come together will also go apart. So studying emptiness is kind of like this constant little brain teaser. It's a constant brain teaser. And what we're trying to do is to challenge our belief that things exist in a certain way. Because we believe things exist in a certain way, then we act in a certain way. And because we act in a certain way, we create these seeds that tend to keep us locked into that pattern. Does that make sense? I'm talking these like huge philosophical terms. But yes, and so because, I mean, we can kind of get on these micro levels, and that's the place to go in the beginning. That's the entrance to all of this, okay? And it's this, I remember when Geshe-la's teacher came and talked about this, he spent just the whole first 2 hours just kind of like encouraging us to be patient and have fun with this because it can get complicated. And so yeah, so what was I saying? I'm telling you, I'm so spaced. Not that recently. So things come together based on causes and conditions. Okay, all right, here we go. So, all right. Because we're all coming together on Monday at 7 o'clock and sitting in this room, we can call this Discovering Buddhism, right? When we all go off to our houses, we can't call this Discovering Buddhism class anymore, right? There's still parts of it. All of you all are in your houses, I'm over in my house. All those parts we didn't just disappear. But we came together for this hour, and because of these parts coming together, it was able to hold the label of Discovering Buddhism class. Everybody can recognize that. Everybody out there knows that the class is happening in here. We know it. I'm going to sign that completion card. It does happen. So emptiness doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It did happen. It exists. It will either be a really good evening or it'll be a really lousy evening. It has different characteristics to it. So it does exist. But it's easy for us to see that this doesn't exist eternally, and it didn't come together out of nothing. It came together out of lots of causes and conditions. But can you name the exact beginning of when this class came together? Did it come together when Discovering Buddhism was made into a course by FPMT? Is that when it came together? Or did it come together just at 7 o'clock tonight? You know, where was that beginning moment of when somebody could say Discovering Buddhism exists? Does that make sense? Maybe that's too kind of like abstract. Something more simple, like my cup. You know, because it has all these things that make up a cup, we all agree that this is a cup. It functions like a cup. It's not functioning like a clock. It's functioning like a cup. I'm using it like a cup. It has all these parts. But if I try to, you know, just as a, again, just an entry point into understanding this, I can't even find the beginning of this cup. I mean, I might be able to find the beginning of when we could call it a cup, you know, when it was finally all put together in a mold and sold to somebody. That's when it was a cup. But all those parts, you can't even find the beginning of when all those parts existed. That's a very simplistic explanation of some of those terms. All right, so speaking of terms, I want to write down some of the things you're going to be hearing a lot of. This will be a good way to just not overwhelm everybody. Some of them I've just been using in this little example. And some is going to get a lot clearer when you just read some of the short articles in the reading. Some of them are just two pages, and I really encourage you to read some of them so we can talk about how they're presenting it. Some of the terms you're going to hear a lot, well, you've already heard me talk about inherent existence. I'm just going to abbreviate it, right? Inherent existence. I'm not sure that that's the best term, but that's what's used a lot. Also, people will say from its side, okay, from the cup side, trying to help us see that the way we often think of things are that they have these separate sides and separateness. And so then people will challenge that by saying from the cup side or from my side. So just, that's all talking about inherent existence. The other term you'll hear a lot, you know, I think even the name of this course is Wisdom Realizing Emptiness, isn't it? Is that right? Wisdom of Emptiness? Okay. You'll also hear people talk a lot about Wisdom Realizing Emptiness, meaning our wisdom or wisdom with a capital W, realizing emptiness. And I remember in the beginning, I always was confused by what the word meant. And then it really became clear to me when I was teaching Geshe-la English in my house, because, I mean, he already knew. He had a good foundation, but there were certain words he would ask me. We'd spend every day going over some vocabulary words. And, you know, how do you explain some of these things? You know, somebody's not fluent in English. But so he was asking me, you know, what does realize mean? What's the difference between realize and know, or realize and think? And one of the things, particularly for this, when we talk about realizing emptiness or realizing impermanence, it means that then there's no going back. So for example, if I was late tonight, like, I thought I was late, and then I realized my watch was fast. There's no going back and then thinking, and then I thought I was late. You know, once I realize I'm not late, my watch is fast, that's a whole different ball game. So here it is, I think I'm late, I'm rushing around, I'm ignorant of the fact that my clock is fast. Then I check and I realize, that's when you use the word realize, I realize, oh, my watch is fast. Now everything changes. There's no going back. It's not like I think I'm late, now I think I'm on time, now I think I'm late, now I think I'm on time. So that's the same thing with realizations. Now, so if in Geshe-la's talk before about if you really have a realization of impermanence is something we all can understand intellectually. But if you have a real understanding of impermanence, it's very different than the way that we have to kind of constantly remind ourselves of impermanence. We might have experiences of impermanence all day long and lots of things to remind us of impermanence. But there's a difference if we had what he's calling realization with a capital R of impermanence. And certainly a difference if we had a realization of emptiness, which, you know, I can't even quite imagine. But, so that's how we're using the word realization. We are going to be learning a lot about emptiness and challenging our thoughts, and we will certainly grow in our understanding of what exists and what doesn't exist and how things appear to us and what's dependent and arising and all of that. But a real realization of emptiness is a whole different ballgame. And I know I'm like all over the place, right? But there's two meditative techniques that we've been practicing, that you've been practicing forever in DB, but they're really critical when it comes to emptiness. So we've been talking about analytical meditation that you do, right? We present a topic and you think about it, or we walk you through a visualization about it. And then the other one is concentration meditation, where you really practice your focus, your single-pointed focus. When you're meditating on emptiness, those two are, that's where they come together. Because you do some analysis on how things exist, or you're trying to negate what you think exists, and then when you get this little bit of an insight into it, that's when you're trying to then just stay. You're trying to just focus on what you've just kind of felt. If that makes sense. So we're going to be, I'll be going over that a lot this module as well. But this is where you see them come together. And I think before, when I was leading the module on meditation, we talked about the concentration meditation as being like a sword cutting through things. This is where it's really cutting through something. You'll see the Buddha of wisdom, Manjushri, holding a blue sword. And that's what that sword represents, that he's cutting through ignorance and wisdom arises. Okay, so then you'll also hear and read people talk about the two extremes, which I just mentioned because I'm on super fast mode, of things exist truly, and nihilistic belief, that we're kind of constantly, usually in the true existence camp. Those are the two extremes. It's really hard to kind of go right down the middle. But those are the two extremes that you'll read about and you'll hear. Okay, ignorance. Ignorance has a different kind of meaning here. It's just not seeing things the way they truly exist. Okay, what'd you say? No, go ahead, I need help. Somebody give him a microphone. No,
I think I was going to say, is ignorance like talking about here. It's not just not knowing. It's the thinking that we know,
mm-hmm.
even though we don't know.
Yeah.
It's like it's not only that we don't know, but we think we know.
Yeah, and it's
maybe I'm not explaining what I think, but
yeah, the conviction that we're right. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of like here's this basic truth, and, mm-hmm. and we don't even acknowledge that it's a basic truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, we superimpose this knowing that we have our own truth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a double whammy. We're not even don't mm-hmm. even get what it really is, but then we have this superimposing thing that we do, I do,
mm-hmm.
I'll speak for myself, that puts it on top of that.
Right.
Not knowing that we don't know, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say we're not looking for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We're
mm-hmm.
totally ignorant that anything else is there,
mm-hmm.
is a possibility.
Yeah, and even when we are looking, I mean, we're all sitting here trying to figure it out. So it's our blind spot. It's our blind spot. Yeah.
It's like we don't know how to look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just kind of...
But, you know, it's also... So there's... Yeah, somebody else? Anybody? Okay. It's not... So, you know, the three poisons. I'm trying to find the snake, and you know, so you know, there's anger, right? Ignorance is the pig. So there's anger, pride, and ignorance. And so ignorance creates more and more of the deeds that we do that keep us stuck in the cyclic existence. But from the way that we're talking about ignorance, it's not as loaded with some of the bad will that the other ones have. The other ones, we can often start working with our anger and our pride. We know where that's coming from. The ignorance often doesn't have that kind of edge. Like, yeah, well, you know, it's not like that. It's more our blind spot. And certainly we're trying. We're trying as hard as we can. That's why we need more fuel in our tank to get there. That's why we talk a lot about, you know, building up merit and purifying and cleaning up that window. So, you know, the stories of Lama Tsongkhapa going and doing retreat and doing all this mandala offering and prostrations to try to do exactly that, to purify his mind and to create more merit so that he could realize more and more. Because, you know, just, okay, I mean, we've talked about this before. A 5-year-old may really, really want to grow up and be a doctor. They're going to have to, there's a long way from being 5 to being finished your professional training, right? They're going to have to do a lot to get through there. At 5, there's nothing they can do at 5 years old to be suddenly a doctor just because they want to be. So it's the same kind of thing that there's so much that we need to kind of stretch to be able to see differently. And we will. We'll get glimpses of it. It's not hopeless at all. But it's also, it's big. It's big. That's all I can say. All right, so ignorance. Then, okay, now you'll also hear me and others talk about the label and the base. These are different ways of describing how we start to view and categorize things. And then one of the articles, hopefully, that you'll read this week talks about the two truths. Okay, so those are just some. Oh, independent arising. Lama Zopa has this story about how he was giving this long teaching on dependent arising, and this one student raised her hand. She thought he had been talking about Tibetan uprising the entire time. So she missed a lot of what he was saying. But we don't talk about dependent arising, you know, it's not something we're constantly talking about. But any questions so far about just this chunk? It's a big chunk. I was just reading how some teachers in FPMT talk about this subject, and they spend the entire first session just talking about the lineage of teachers. So I feel like I certainly should mention that. You know, that us thinking about this topic, we're connected to this huge chain of wisdom, right? It's not us just alone here, which always gives me a lot of comfort. I don't know about you. But, you know, so you start with Shakyamuni Buddha, who then taught this, and then there's some Indian pundits who really, really have written an incredible amount about this. You'll hear Nagarjuna. He's one of the people who wrote a lot about emptiness. Lama Tsongkhapa. These are people who we are getting all this information from in their thinking and their commentaries and their teachings. And then, you know, all the way down to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who taught Geshe-la, and now Geshe-la is here teaching us. And so this is a topic that he studied intensely at the monastery. So not only does he have a Geshe degree, which is the equivalent of, like, you know, the highest degree that we have in our, say a divinity schools, times 15, because, I mean, he studied for like 20-something years. Then there's different levels of a Geshe degree, and he has the highest level, which is Geshe Larampa, which is the same as His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So, you know, sometimes I'll go to him with some of my questions about emptiness, and it's like my head explodes. I kind of understand it for a minute, and I'm like, wait a minute. But this is the topic he really likes to talk about. So I'm just encouraging you to keep pushing yourself, keep thinking about these things, keep writing down questions, because we have the perfect person to ask. You know, I'm just kind of giving you a little sampler plate. And then there's this person who can really go, and if you request more teachings on this, he'd be happy to do that. He's not going to say, okay, I think you all need to study this now. But if enough of us said, you know, would you do a special teaching on a Saturday about emptiness? He would certainly take that into consideration, yeah. So consider this like, you know, a prerequisite just to get some of the basics down. And yeah, I used to go crazy with this topic and ask them all millions and one questions. And so I feel like I got to a certain point and then I have to constantly refresh it and remind myself. And that's exactly what he says he's doing. He's sitting going through meditations where he's challenging certain beliefs and certain ways that he's seeing things to kind of like bust that open a little bit. And it's also said that even a moment of thinking that things don't exist the way that we see them is incredible purification. It's incredible. It just shakes up your way of seeing things. And then what I'd really like to hear from you all before I just keep on blabbering away is what, I mean, you may not be like me, but whenever I'm studying something, there's this other voice in the back of my head going, pah, pah, you know, duh, and just yabbering away and being like a really bad student, you know, in the class. So if you've got those, I would like to know, like, what are the things that you either want to make sure that you learn in this module, or some of the things that stop you from understanding any of this, because I know a lot of you have read some stuff about emptiness. Yeah. Anybody got a mic for him?
Existing from its own side, that I've read some books on,
yeah.
And I'm really glad that we're studying emptiness now, because it's something that I think I have an understanding and then it seems to slip away, but this existing from its own side, and I think there's a Lama Yeshe book out there where he talks about a table,
mm-hmm.
and you put the label on the table,
mm-hmm.
but the table doesn't, and I get there, the table doesn't, we put a label on the table, but the dog outside could come in and doesn't see a table, it sees
right.
some collection of something, a wood,
right.
stuff's on it.
Right, right, okay. Okay, I like that label on the table thing. We could make like a little wrap. All right, do you want me to talk a little bit about that, or does somebody else have one that they want to? Okay. So a lot of these things are to kind of like, again, I don't have the complete... In all of my studying, what I think of this is each thing is meant to shake up something. It's not the entire answer, but each one comes along and shakes it up a little bit. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but it's the same thing we're going to be talking about the entire time. So I'd really like you to be honest with me, take notes about what's like, you know, going on in your head when we start talking about this, because then I can find another way to talk about it next time. So there's a couple different things you said, and just like I said before, like impermanence, just thinking about impermanence, we start to respond to things differently, right? So when we also think about the way we label things, we respond to things differently, that, you know, all sentient beings have consciousness, they perceive things differently. So the example of a dog and a human being, you know, both being in the same room but perceiving something differently. Even two human beings being in the room, seeing things differently, helps us understand that, helps us understand the ways that we're labeling something versus something else. So, okay, I have a funny example. Anybody watch that show Taxi a long time ago? You know that? Okay. So Jim, who's the kind of like burnt out hippie, right? Everybody goes up to his apartment. He's got one of those big, like, big round tables that was like a spool for some kind of cable, and hippies used to use it for tables, right? And so somebody says, "Oh, Jim, I like your table." And he goes, "It's a table? Yeah. I use it to crack walnuts." And he puts walnuts under it and cracks the walnuts. Which, you know, nobody does, but there it was. It had once been a spool for a huge cable thing. Lots of people used it as tables in the 60s and 70s, and here this guy was using it as a nutcracker. And it actually can hold all of those different labels. When it was being used as a spool, nobody would have called it a table. It wasn't functioning as a table. Then a bunch of people took it and put it in their houses. Now it's a table. So that's kind of to shake up our idea of what the thing is and the label. Now, one thing for sure that you can't do is take that table and label it as a dog, because you can't just create things just because you label something. I can't just say, "This is a dog," because it doesn't function as a dog. So that's really critical, because sometimes when people start thinking about emptiness, they get into this magical thing of like, "I can just make things up." Yeah, you can, but you're going to be alone in your world, because things have to function also. But it gets tricky, because you go to a play. There's somebody in the play who's an actor who's on stage as a chef. They're acting as a chef. Everybody in the theater is saying, "Yeah, that's a chef," but also everybody really knows that's an actor. So I'm just trying to throw out a whole bunch of things right now, okay? That's just a little nuance between how things function and the label. They have to actually function as what it's being labeled as. But this doesn't function as a cup for an ant. If an ant crawled in here and died, you know, it's a death trap for an ant. So that's a little bit to shake up this idea that things exist from their own side, because if it existed from its own side, every single creature and every single consciousness would see this the same. That's one kind of way. Yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
So, one of the things, I don't know, frustration, or it's hard for me to understand about emptiness, is kind of like one of the things I didn't like about psychology in college was you'd read all this whole study, and then it would say, well, you know, it's not really scientific, and it's like, okay, so the limited reading I've done on emptiness, and, you know, you think you get it, and then they like throw in this stuff like, well, but if someone says this, it's not necessarily that. I've read a little of the Lam Rim on it, and it seems like once you get to a certain understanding, then they go deeper and start arguing about it more, and it just confuses me. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well,
it's like you think you get it, but, well, that can be challenged too, and then this can be challenged too. And
well, I think
I don't know where to go with my mind.
Well, that's okay, because I think like I said before, there's certain doorways that lead us in. And then when you take those two steps in, there's a whole nother room. So now it's going to challenge you to go to that whole other room. So if you enter in because the doorway in is through impermanence and understanding dependent arising, great, you've stepped in. Now there's a lot more. It's not the same as just studying impermanence. You know, that's kind of a, yeah, okay, got it. There's another step. And then there's these different schools that studied the stools, right? Okay. I'll rephrase it. I'll rephrase it for the audience at home. He's talking about the different schools. It's called Tenets. You can look it up. It's very, very complex in one way. And when I started reading it and when Geshe was talking to me, what I really saw was the schools, and there's no school out there. It's just these different thoughts about emptiness that the one that the Tibetan Buddhist follow is the highest one. It's basically stepping stones. So just like when I'm studying emptiness in the beginning, it doesn't make any sense. Well, impermanence makes sense. Independent arising makes sense. That's the first school. Then the second school challenges that and says, yeah, okay, dependent arising is okay, but how are you really going to define the self? Okay? It's just meant to lead you further and further. So I wouldn't get I wouldn't mess myself up right now by studying those schools. In the monastery, they spend, 7 years studying the first school. Now 7 years studying the next school. You know, we're not going to do that. Okay, so, but I want to get back to this label on the table. The other thing, most of us know in Western philosophical thought, I can't remember which philosopher it was, that, you know, the racer can never get to the finish line because you can always divide the distance in half. It's not Descartes, but it's, isn't it somebody with a Z? Zeno's paradox. So, you know, it's kind of cool because it's kind of about emptiness. So, now this is Westerner, right? He said, the runner can never get to the finish line because you can always divide that distance in half. All right, but we know the runner gets to the finish line because they got all these photographs of that. It's on the news. And people are getting tested for steroids. They get to the finish line. But the point was, I thought, well taken, which is that you can never really find half of half, because then you can find another half of half and another half of half. It's not whether they can get to the finish line, it's you can never divide something in half. That, it's like calculus, it's like emptiness. And that's a little bit about what you're talking about with the table, because I'll get to that in a minute. But I remember once I was reading a lot about emptiness, and I was laying in this hotel room thinking about this thing about dividing something in half and the label, and everybody agrees that I'm in a hotel because of this, this, and this. It holds the label of hotel. But where, this is the other thing that you'll ask yourself in meditations. Okay, but where is the hotel? Is the hotel these bricks? Is it this? Is it that? And that's the same thing as when people say, where is half? Where is half of that distance?
Or what is half? I mean,
Oh, God. Is
half?
Yeah, what is half and where is half? Part of it is, you know, in a really simple, you can always, one of the things that helps me is everything is relative, okay? So some people describe me as tall. I would never think of myself as tall because I'm the shortest in my family. It's all relative. I'm tall compared to some people. I'm not tall compared to other people. There's really no north and south on the planet. If you're standing on Mars, you wouldn't say, oh, there's the north part of Earth. So everything is relative. We need those things, though, in order to give directions, you know, in order to function in the world. We need some of those labels. We agree on those labels to help us pick up, where's your iPad? If we didn't have a label for where she found her iPad, we wouldn't be able to tell her. Well, it's all relative. Sorry, I can't tell you what direction your iPad's in because it's all relative. But when we understand that thing, it's all relative. So when you're reading and you hear, especially like Lama Zopa talk about merely imputed, that term used to drive me up the wall. I was like, what do you mean merely imputed? It means it's kind of all relative, or that they're trying to create this distance between the label and the base. There's a difference between the label. I'm really getting complicated. Okay. But I just want to give you this sampler and then we'll keep going at it. Part of the questions that will come to you is, okay, I hope I'm not going to confuse you more by giving you this fast answer, but this table has all these parts. We've put them together in a way that we can all agree this is a table, right? Then there's two things that we can do in a meditation, which is to look at, well, what is the table its parts? If I took this leg off the table, would you still say it's a table? If I took the top off the table and put it over there, would you say this is a table? This used to drive me crazy too, because I'd say, of course not. But it's all the parts. It's all the parts put together in a certain way, and we agree it's a table. So why can't we just say the table is the sum of its parts? And then Geshe would say, oh, the sum of all of its parts is the base that holds the label. So the sum, all of this put together in a certain way, is what's called the base. Without that base, we wouldn't say, oh, Steve, go get your glasses are on the table. We would say, oh, go get your glasses between those two sticks of wood. We'd have some other label for it, right? But because it's sitting here and we all say this is a table, and if I said, please, where are my glasses? You would say it's on the table. If these were all in pieces, you wouldn't be able to say that. So we can all agree, with all these parts together, there is something there, which we call a base, that holds the label table. Then I would ask Geshe-la, okay, so there's a base and there's a label. Can one go without the other? No. The answer pretty much is no. They're not the same. But they're not the same thing. But one can't function without the other. There has to be one to have the other. And then I would come up with all these examples of why not, blah, blah, blah. But no, everything that has a base has a label. And everything that has a label has a base. But they're not the exact same thing. And this is then when you get into things about dependent arising, you know, how do things arise? So that's something that we can all, when you get really frustrated, you can kind of go back to that, and you can understand that everything that you can think of came into existence based on causes and conditions. So the causes are those seeds, right? So you can, some seeds are sitting over in a rocky place and they don't have the right conditions to grow. So they need the cause and then the condition. And then they come together and something grows. And that, to me, that's a much easier and kind of more fun meditation, because you can kind of trace back certain causes and conditions to anything that's interesting to you. And you go, oh, yeah, things arise. Okay. And that all of this, the other thing to remember, because sometimes when people meditate on emptiness, they get a little freaked out. And that's not the point. The point of all of these things that we ever talk about is to empower you. That's what it's about, is to empower you and to liberate you. That's the complete point of all of it. And, it's tricky because you're walking that fine line between those two extremes all the time. And then just keep coming back to that. And Geshe-la always tells you stories about monks who are doing these formal meditations on emptiness, which we'll do. But they put a pin in their robe so that if they start to get a little scared, like, oh, maybe I don't exist, they just hit that pin. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I exist. But... you know, we exist. We might not exist in the way that we think we exist. That's the whole point of studying emptiness, is to just kind of break up and challenge the way that we think things function.
But that's key right there, too. Form and function helps. It seems like that's what you use to apply the label to the base.
Form and function. Oftentimes, there's things that aren't form, that also have labels. Yeah, emotions. And so, but they also have causes and conditions. They also have a base. They also have a label. So a base doesn't always have to be physical, right? But it has to have something that we can agree, oh, that's anger. You know, again, but then you get into the things too of like, okay, this is something that helps people understand emptiness in the beginning too, that things don't inherently exist from their own side. I really kind of like this tea I'm drinking. Other people really like that tea. Other people don't like that tea. So that's an easy way for us to understand that it's not coming, the quality of the tea isn't coming from its side. That's what they mean, you know, that it's coming from a combination of things. My relationship to it, you know. It's just that it's very hard to then impossible to parse out all of these places and see where things are. So that's the other thing in Western philosophy. We, you know, that famous saying about you never put your foot in the same river twice. That's totally all about emptiness. Totally. And we all get it. We go, yeah, that's right. Okay, so then if you get that, you're well on the way to studying emptiness. And, you know, what do they mean by that? You never put your foot in the same river twice. Well, because that water's always moving, right? So the river is always different. And then I trip myself out by going, okay, but where's the river? Is the river the water? Is it the ground that has that little channel dug into it? Is that the river? Is it the source of the river? You know, okay, it can't function without any of those. If the ground wasn't in that little channel, then the water would just be all spread out and, you know, so it would be a swamp. Yeah, it would be my home state. So, it has to have that. It has to have the river. Otherwise, it would have to have the water. Otherwise, it'd be a dry riverbed. It would have another label for it. It has to have the source. It has to have the, where it's going. So you can't, that's when you also read, find the river. They don't mean that the river doesn't exist. That's, again, those two extremes. If you say, I can't find the river. Oh, really? Oh, really? You can't find the river? If I gave you this direction to the Cape Fear River, you wouldn't be able to get to the Cape Fear River? You would definitely be able to get to the Cape Fear River. So it's just that back and forth constantly of find the river. You can't find. What they mean by that is where in all of those parts is the river? But on the other hand, it's not that it doesn't exist, because you can go and get a hotel room right on the side of the river. Everybody understands that. Things function. Things exist, but they don't exist in that solid way that we think they exist. And lots of the meditations you've already been doing are about that. The meditations you've done on friend and enemy and stranger, it's about the fluidity of that label. What holds that label of friend, stranger, or enemy, and how that changes. That's also meant to empower you so that you don't get stuck with this one label, and you see the interrelationship between you and that label. It's all meant to empower you. Yeah.
So then, is emptiness merely a label?
Is it
permanent? Or is it impermanent?
So emptiness itself is one of the few things that would be called permanent.
But it also depends on causes and conditions as well, no? Maybe it's the understanding that depends on causes and conditions?
Say the second part again. Maybe it's the understanding?
Is it the understanding of emptiness that depends on the causes and conditions that makes it, that would, well, no, that.
Well, the realization of emptiness depends on causes and conditions. Our understanding of emptiness.
Right.
But even if I never understood emptiness, it would exist.
Is it considered a phenomenon? Is it considered a permanent phenomenon then?
It's one of the very few things when in these debate classes, Geshe-la's, when you list what's permanent is emptiness. It's just like outer space, okay? Emptiness is often in the same way, because space is considered permanent. Okay, space. We can't erase space. And space is permanent and infinite in the same way that, I mean, we're not talking about the space in my cup. We're talking about, you know, yeah, vast space. That's the same as emptiness. I'll try to get a little better definition for you next time. That works? Yeah.
But emptiness can exist without dependent arising, right? Is that correct? And dependent arising can't exist without emptiness. Correct?
That's a really good question, and that's why I wrote up there. That's the relationship. What's the relationship between the two? Definitely, dependent arising cannot exist without emptiness. Excuse me. Definitely, dependent arising cannot exist without emptiness. Kind of like. That's a really bad example. I was thinking of like painting something. You know, painting something can't exist without the something you're going to paint on. But, dependent arising cannot exist without emptiness. the base can't exist. The base of something comes into existence based on causes and conditions. Geshe-la often talks about, to help people kind of look at this, like a president. Okay, so before, when Obama was a senator, you couldn't call him a president. You know, he did not hold the label president. But he was still there. He still was a human being. But he could not hold that label. And then there'll be a time when he doesn't hold that label anymore. And I used to think that that was a really bad example. But I think what he's trying to get you to see is that something still existed there until we all agreed that now he held the label of president. And so before you're born, when you're in utero, your parents might have named you. You're in progress, but you're not exactly holding the full label yet, right? I'm trying to think of some other things that Geshe-la would help me with this. In the beginning, I remember I used to really just get all tripped out about, like, oh, yeah, so this food we're eating, I like it, you don't like it, it's empty of that quality. And I thought I pretty much had it. I was like, I think I got it. And then I remember, this blew my mind. He had this, you know, this Tibetan prayer that he had over our doorway to our kitchen. And he would talk about every time you walk under it, you know, you're receiving all these blessings. And I think, that just doesn't fit with emptiness. You know, how in the world does that, if it's empty, how would it be, how would these prayer flags or these tankas or anything have any of that quality that you're talking about? And I loved his answer. Does anybody else have a similar, like, I guess I was just really stubborn. But it just seemed like it did not jive at all with emptiness. And then what he said really helped me, because then it made me understand this kind of connection between karma and emptiness, which is, he said, yes, on its own, it has nothing. But because there's been hundreds and hundreds of years of people saying this prayer, and but just those squiggles themselves mean nothing. But because we've spent, you know, centuries and centuries saying this prayer, then these words have a certain power to them. So you'll see in one of the, I think maybe it's Virtue and Reality, I think he uses the letter A, and he breaks apart the letter A, where, you know, it's got these two legs and then this, you know, and how long have we been recognizing this is A? But from its own side, it's not A. Or if I took this out, what is it? You know, or, I mean, it has, again, all these parts and things. But we could all vote tomorrow as a whole world that now this is A and now this would be A, and we would all agree on that, right? So it's not coming from here as much as, is this plus us equals A? And that's what I finally got from the prayers. It's like it had that power because of how many people had been saying that prayer and bringing that kind of thought to it. And that's the connection between emptiness and dependent arising. Just like I remember I watched this movie, The Shadows of Motown, and I probably told you all this story before, but, you know, they used to practice in this basement in Detroit for years and years and years. And I mean, Stevie Wonder, when he was just a little kid, used to go there. And then there was a great documentary about all these people. And then they left there and it became something else. And then years later, some of the musicians, like the backup bands, went there. And they said all they had to do was walk in that room, and it just felt incredibly powerful to them. Why? Not because it was just some basement, but because of all that they had put into it. All those hours and years of this incredible music and all these people coming together. They had imbued that space with that, and they could feel it. They could get that vibe from it. Same thing. You're not going to just feel something from, you're not going to feel A from this, unless there was a lot of, I mean, do you remember the first time you started reading and none of it made any freaking sense, right? And I remember when I was really little, I wanted to write so bad. And my mom would be writing letters and I would sit there and I would go like, I would just, you know, okay, Mom, what did I write? What did I write, Mom? Did I write anything? And she would say, no. And so I'd try again. Did I write anything? You know, because why can't these things be writing? They look the same thing as like what she was writing. and that's the same thing. It's like you can't just create something out of nothing. Things, they didn't function as words, right? It wasn't coming together that way. Yeah.
What if people disagree? I don't want to be picky. It may not be germane. If I think this is one thing and you think it's something else.
Right.
Then is it just a situation? I mean.
Yeah. Well, like the nutcracker in the table?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for Jim, that was a nutcracker. It functioned as a nutcracker for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it can have different labels. So they often use the example of, it could be for different species, you know, or different beings. So like, these are my keys. They start my car. For a little 3-year-old, it might be a toy, right? It functions as a toy for her. You know, it's keys for me. So it can serve two purposes.
And both are valid.
And both are valid. Yeah.
Okay.
They can serve two different purposes. We'd still have a hard time finding exactly, you know, we'd still have a hard time finding halfway. In other words, we'd still have a hard time. That's the whole point, is things can have different labels if they serve those different purposes. And it helps us understand then that different consciousnesses see different things different ways. And we're trying to get our consciousness as clean as possible so we can see the highest ways that things function.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's said, a typical example you'll read about is a bowl of water. Looks like a bowl of water to beings on Earth. They say lower beings will see that as pus. Celestial beings will see it as pure nectar. But even in our realm, an ant is not going to see that as, is not going to see this as a cup of tea, even though what they're seeing something, you know. I think that's all meant to try to encourage us to keep cleaning our stuff up, because then we'll see things as in the highest possible ways. So like a three-year-old seeing this as keys, me seeing it as something that starts my car. If I was able to really see emptiness, I'd probably be able to see all kinds of other things here.
More flexible.
Yeah. I don't know about just more flexible, but I would see, that's a really good question for Rabina, like when you realize emptiness, then how do you see things? That's a whole nother ballgame, but yeah. But there's lots of things on my key. Like this, there used to be a flashlight. That's gone. I have my dog's old collar. After she died, it went on here. And it even has my old phone number. And once I left my keys, I used to work in the courthouse, and I left them in this courtroom, and the bailiff picked this up and called my house and asked for Ripley, the dog, who had died. People were like, who? What, you want Ripley? Oh, yeah, and so there's all kinds of things on here, but, you know, I would say to you, go get my keys, and you would know exactly what I meant, because we all agreed on this being keys. What do y'all think? I think I've exhausted the whole module in one night.
I'm not coming back.
Yeah, tell me some things that are rattling around in your head for next week. Go ahead, you have one. I can see it on your face. No, right here.
No?
No?
I'm just feeling kind of empty.
Empty of understanding, yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, so do we... I'm back at when Geshe was walking through the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were having the discussion about what made those symbols,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever they're on,
mm-hmm.
significant.
Mm-hmm.
And And so there was this whole history
mm-hmm.
of agreement that the practices and all the that had been given, you know, to those
mm-hmm.
symbols that made them significant
mm-hmm.
or of
right.
Maybe significant isn't the right word.
Power.
Power. Or,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So my question has to do with, do we, from lifetime to lifetime, carry with us certain I guess that's my first question. From lifetime to lifetime, carry with us, like into this lifetime, certain things that give power
mm-hmm.
to our reality, to mm-hmm. our to how we come to something
mm-hmm.
or view something or
mm-hmm.
Believe in something or relate to something.
So let me see if I get it. So one answer is yes. because so even if, I mean, it's often said, like, you know, okay, I can look at this tanka and recognize that that's Shakyamuni
right.
Buddha. If we brought Bodhi in here, Bodhi would see things. We don't know what exactly Bodhi's seeing. Bodhi's probably not seeing as all the colors that we see, right? But Geshe-la would say that even though Bodhi doesn't understand that these are Buddhas, it's an imprint on his consciousness that will ripen in some future life in a positive way. So just being exposed to images.
Yes, yes.
And it doesn't mean that they, again, it doesn't mean that they exist from their own side, because Bodhi has to connect to them. This is a little dog we're talking about. That comes together. It's like a seed. Okay? So now it's not acting on its own. There has to be the right causes and conditions that make that seed ripen. So it might not be in this lifetime.
So we carry those seeds.
Our consciousness. Our
carries those seeds.
Right. Our consciousness.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That stream of consciousness that goes lifetime after lifetime is carrying all kinds of seeds. All kinds of seeds. And some of these, Geshe-la would say, are imprints, which... Oh, that's really tricky to start talking about imprints and karma, but imprints. So, like, he talks about, like, people in his village who don't have the imprint to read, even though they might have all the material because they never were educated, right? So where I might say, oh, they weren't educated to read, they have the ability to read, but nobody ever taught them to read. And he would say, too, that if somebody was teaching them, that places the imprint on their consciousness. That's in this lifetime, then you can kind of understand that if they were taught to read, they would have this imprint and to read. Anyway, we'll keep talking about imprints, but I think that's what we're touching on, is the imprint. So even if I'm walking under that prayer thing that he had over the door and I never really understand it or don't read it, what he's saying is that my consciousness, it is placing an imprint on my consciousness which will ripen in some lifetime.
Is that yeah. existence?
Mm-hmm. Has that always existed? I love that with a prayer flag, if Geshe-la was sitting right here and a breeze came through, there's power that would come through that. He understands that. You just said that, and but I don't have that. It doesn't hold the same power for me. Is that inherent existence? That the power that came, mm-hmm. a breeze comes all across a prayer flag, has that always existed?
Has what always existed?
The power that you would get
mm-hmm.
from that.
I don't
or
think...
From an object, like, or the sign over
mm-hmm.
your pathway into the kitchen.
Right. Well, no, there was a time when that prayer, that mantra was created. There was a time when the Tibetan language was created, so it wouldn't have always existed. And it's not inherent existence because, you know, this is where things have to come together.
If inherent existence would mean that it never had to come together. So I remember asking Geshe-la once, like, we were in the old center, and there was a pillar in that center, and asked him something about inherent existence. He would say then something like, I can't remember it. I'll try to get it for you, because it's a real important definition. If something inherently existed, it would have always existed. We would all know about it. It didn't start, in that it has no parts, or, you know, it didn't come together.
That's what emptiness is.
Emptiness is what?
It is inherent existence.
Emptiness is not inherent existence, but you could say emptiness like space, okay?
Yes.
Outer space isn't, I wouldn't use the term inherent existence for space. I would just say space is permanent. You could say space is permanent.
Okay.
I just I don't want you all to confuse those terms.
Right.
Yeah. So space is permanent. It's always existed. Space has always existed. I know that the scientists have taught, and Dalai Lama said, you know, yes, Big Bang, no problem, but many Big Bangs, you know. So what was before?
A really good article that came out of it.
Yeah.
I think this past week about.
Oh, really? Okay, so he's saying at home, he's saying there's a good article on the Internet. Where on the Internet?
I'll share it.
Okay, next week, share it about how space and time have always existed. So,
beginningless time.
Right, so beginningless time. That's why we use the term beginningless time. Yeah.
So outside of the practical, outside of the trying to understand conceptually what emptiness means, how might we begin to benefit from, the process of trying to understand it, and then apply it in practical terms.
Okay, that's a great question. So in real, I mean, I think of this still as emptiness. You might think of it more as impermanence. But like when I was talking about, have you ever done the meditation on the label of friend, enemy, and stranger? That's one way to understand the fluidity of things. So when, and Joanna, you might have some ideas about this too, but, I have another example. So I used to have incredibly painful menstrual periods. I mean, just debilitating, like labor-like. And I would be in pain for like 5 hours and throw up, and it was just awful. And why am I telling you this? Emptiness. Because what was the first one I was telling you about before I went after my periods?
Friends, enemies,
and friends.
Stranger.
Okay. yeah, I had a really bad friend. No, there was something I was going to say about that. Oh my God! But I used to do this meditation that actually ended up helping, where you just kind of soften around all this pain, and you put the pain like out on the middle of the ocean. There was another point besides all of that. Friend, enemy, and stranger. It'll come back to me. But, I know why. Okay, so I read this great, but this is actually, I was in my 20s when I read this book by Stephen Levine, who turns out he writes a lot about Buddhism. And one of his questions in the book was to ask yourself, who is this in pain? You know, or he was writing for a lot of people who were dying. Who is it that's dying? Because you have labeled parts of yourself, and especially with our work, we're so identified with our work. I am this, I am that, and he's just trying to challenge that. So I think that's a real practical way of challenging that. You know, I would do that. Like, who is this that's in pain? And it would just start to shift things in my head a little bit. Another practical way that I think about it is to me, that inspires me to try to see things in a different way. So like when I'm, say, in a really difficult situation at work, who is this that's getting, who am I? What part of me is so invested in this argument or that argument? I can start to see things shake up a little bit. You know, you're just constantly questioning the labels that you put on things, or that, okay, this, when I say that this is empty, doesn't mean that it's not painful. So I had a friend who used to say something like, oh, she had a bad, say, pain or headache. She goes, oh, but you know, it's all empty. And then I said, you know, it's not that, it's because things are empty that you have a headache. It's not that I have a headache, it's empty. And that's what happens at the beginning. We think we dismiss things. It's empty. No, I have a headache because things are empty. Because things are empty, things change. Things come in into being and they go out. And that is supposed to be very liberating and empowering thing. So you all have heard me use this example many times that, you know, I didn't grow up in any religion, so all the different stories that I hear of any religion are always like great to me. I just like, wow. So they don't come with extra baggage. And so when I was probably in my late teens and or maybe in 20s, I heard this story, you know, somebody touching Jesus' robe and they were healed. And Jesus said, no, it was your faith that healed you. To me, that's a perfect example of emptiness, because this is also the same thing about any holy object. If it was the combination of whatever Jesus was holding and that person's view. Other people would walk by Jesus and not even recognize anything. Other people wanted to kill him. So, but if this person had this much faith and they connected with something that was positive, boom, both things came together, right? So that inspires me to like try to clean up my mind as much as possible so that I can encounter things that are positive for me and they have that kind of an impact. Does that
help? Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Those are really important things to keep in mind when you're studying this, because otherwise it just feels like some kind of puzzle that, you know, why am I looking at this? And then you just keep peeling back other layers and keep circling around it. And always ask yourself that very question, how is this going to help me? Anything else before we kind of wrap up?
I'll say one more thing. The thing that I read one time, and I'll make it real quick, was that what I like, and Katie and I were talking about it before class, about how the whole philosophy here is to get to the middle. And I once read about emptiness and dependent arising, that it gets you to the middle.
Mm.
Because emptiness says, okay, dependent arising says, okay, doesn't mean nothing exists, it has a function. Whereas emptiness kind of takes things are absolute off it, and it gets you to that middle ground. And I kind of use that if I get into arguments or disagreements with people. Like, okay, where's the middle ground? And I take stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, this part has a function in this. It's very subtle, but it helps me get back to that middle ground.
Yeah, middle ground.
I use it at work when my managers want something and they both want something different. And
yeah,
you know, it drives me crazy. But
yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Okay, so let's take a minute to dedicate the merit that we've all created by challenging our conceptual or our usual way of thinking.
And doing it on a holy day.
Oh, right. So this is that thing of combining things, right? So you can think about this day and all the miracles that occurred on this day, and you're joining your thoughts on this special day. So then take a minute to just even just see how much, you know, you got yourself here on a rainy Monday night to talk about a very difficult topic. And, you know, not that many people are doing that. It's huge. And then it's on the miracle day, so it's even huger. And then when you dedicate the seeds that you've created, that you will be carrying, that will ripen in some way, in some life, this or future lives, and now you decide how it's going to ripen. You can decide that you want it to eliminate all obstacles between you and understanding, having the realization of emptiness. And make sure you kind of include that as you understand emptiness, it will help you and all those around you. You will have the wisdom to know how to be as compassionate as you can be. And just know from the depths of your heart that these seeds are in your consciousness, will not be lost, and that you have the ability to just increase them. And I thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.